When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My voice going properly yet? It's husky. It's not good.
Just from the fish burn?
Hmm. You can scratch the back of your throat, I think.
Really?
I think it has.
I don't know how you managed to do that.
I don't. Well, I couldn't see it. It was a tiny little bone right in the middle.
You're not a very lucky person.
No.
You know, like some people, I just think are lucky. Like often things happen to you that are just kind of not really really bad, just mildly inconvenient.
Yeah.
Apart from that time you had like cancer, that was bad.
Yes, a lot of things happen that's just mildly
inconvenient. Mm. Like the trains. Like I know everyone has issues with the trains and stuff, but you are unfairly picked out quite often. You know, with bad train things.
Mm. Well, I've got a bad one coming up this Sunday because it's engineering work again.
Mm.
So
it's because you always get the weekend as well. Yeah. But you often are just little annoyances. Well, they follow you, Dad.
Yeah.
Unless maybe you're just more annoyed by them than anyone else.
It could be that. Although I think, by and large, I've been blessed. By and large,
I'm
very
yeah.
lucky with you.
Have you seen a film called Just My Luck?
No, I haven't.
It's a film with Lindsay Lohan. And the premise of the film, it's not a great film, I'm not going to lie, is that she's just so unbelievably lucky. And then she kisses this boy and then she passes all the luck to him. But then really, you know, the moral of the story is that no one's more lucky than anyone else. It's just...
Yeah. Well, I saw... that's one of those films where you would write it down on the back of a cigarette packet or something. It's a high-concept movie, isn't it?
I wouldn't write on the back of the cigarette packet because I know that smoking kills.
It does, that's true. But you would write it down on a little scrap of paper,
yeah.
a napkin or whatever, because it's a high-concept movie. And if you've got Lindsay Lohan and you just wrote the one sentence, they would say, yeah, we'll make that film. You'd get millions of dollars. The one I saw... which, again, I think was supposed to be a high-concept movie. I watched about 10 minutes on Sky, and it just drove me mad. It was called The Invention of Lying, which is Ricky Gervais. Had got quite a big reputation in America because of The Office, so they thought, oh, he'll be great in movies, which, of course, he isn't. He's awful. Basically, he's in this town or in this country or in this landscape in which nobody can lie. Everybody tells the absolute truth all the time.
Mm.
And then he goes to the... bank and makes a mistake and says he's got $8,000 in his account, whereas actually he's only got $3,000. But because nobody lies, they give him the $8,000. And he realizes then that he's invented this thing whereby you can get what you want. You know, because up till then, everything's been completely truthful. But the most amusing thing about this film is that Louis C.K. has a cameo role in the film. So Ricky Gervais is at this bar saying to the barman and to Louis C.K., who's the customer there, saying, if you could get anything you want, what would you do? What would you do if you could have anything you wanted? And Louis C.K. admittedly, this was before it all happened.
Mm.
Louis C.K. says, oh, I touch women's boobs or maybe have sex with them.
Oh, and he does that anyway, so there you go.
I thought, that's hiding in plain sight, if you like.
Gosh, that's brilliant. I'm surprised no one's... picked that out and put it on Twitter, to be honest.
Excuse me, you're looking at someone who picked it out and put it on Twitter.
Did you just put the clip up?
I put the clip up, and the caption was, I think Louis C.K. is going to have to be more careful about his cameo roles in future. But it didn't get a huge reaction.
I was going to say.
20 likes and a couple of retweets.
Poor show, really.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, we've gone absolutely, completely off course there.
Yeah, should we start?
Yeah. Just to welcome you properly, this is Ruthie, Uni Dad and me. I'm Ruthie. I'm a student at the University of York studying French and Spanish. And this is my dad.
I'm Dad.
Nothing interesting to say about him.
Not really.
We'll move straight on. I saw a really interesting story in the Independent. See? Broadening my newspaper reading. It mentioned York St John University, which is not the one I'm at, but it is the other university that's in York. And
the Polytechnic, as we call it.
Yeah, but we don't call it that anymore because it's not right. Well, there's a bit of a rivalry, you know, the You know, you don't like people to get it wrong that you're from St. John's when you're not, and then they all think that we're posh and up ourselves, which...
To an extent, you are.
Arguably, yeah. anyway, so but it does mention this one York St. John University student who told a story about sex work, because the whole article is about how a lot of students are actually turning to sex work in order to be able to like fund their education. So it says there are twice as many students this year compared to 2018 who are turning to adult work, from 2% to 4%. This includes sugar dating and having sex for money. And amid financial concerns and rising living costs, a survey has suggested.
Now, sugar dating, that would be dating older people who've paid for it, not necessarily including sex, but possibly.
Yeah, a lot of times I think like sugar daddy relationships can work in which you are just...
You're an escort.
Yeah, sort of. Or not even an escort, because an escort implies more kind of sexual or whatever. I think more... I said sexual or whatever, which if anyone who goes to university listens to this will really make them laugh, because they also... I went to Catholic school, and I think this is ingrained in me, a kind of prudishness towards talking about sex. And every time I say sex, I go sex or whatever, because I need to get away from the word as fast as I possibly can.
The benefits of a Catholic education.
You know, some people have it worse. You know, they have real, true, like... deeply ingrained problems, but I just say sex or whatever really quickly every time I have to say it. I think, but sugar dating can also be kind of more like just being someone for someone to talk to, like less
or
kind
to go
of
to an
shady
event. You go to an event to, you know, take someone
just
along.
Take for coffee. That I think it can be those types of things as well. So this brings it to 1 in 25 students have turned towards some form of sex work. The most common, it mentions things like selling your underwear or taking pictures of various things and sending it, or ranges from quite...
So
like,
notice the Catholic school kicking in there, taking pictures of various things.
But it ranges for sort of quite mild things like... take a picture of your feet or something, to all the way up to actually having sex for money. So, like proper sex work. But it's like really unsurprising, because the Save the Student research, which Save the Student is a really good like financial tips website for students, and it says that students spend an average of £807 a month on living costs, which is up from £770 in 2018. So just like... skyrocketed within 2 years. And you can see that in the price of rent. Like the company that most people get their houses for second year through, when we were looking at them, they said, I can't remember, we were on a house viewing of one of them, and he said that like everything on the website has gone up by £15 or something. Like just huge amounts within a year, which makes complete sense to this, because it's £30 more living costs, so rent more expensive. And anyway, this second year student at York St. John, she told The Independent that she carried out adult work as money was a massive concern, like not anything really more than that. I think that there could be a preconception that you would have to be really like damaged or something to do this, but I think the whole article was kind of saying it's actually just a necessity for a lot of people.
I think if you're saying it's just purely an economic transaction, I think you'd have to be really careful and really check out. I mean, you could almost have a sister organisation, if you like, maybe, you know, a commercial organisation that checks out these things for you.
Yeah, well, so it goes on to talk about...
It's a little business niche for you there.
wouldn't you love that? It goes on a little bit to talk about how we need to... So one of the slogans that a lot of these things come with is, like, sex work is real work, and just, like, legitimising this work, because it's going to happen anywhere. Rachel Waters, the Women's Students Officer at the National Union of Students, says, we know that the criminalisation of sex work does not stop sex work from happening, but only pushes it further underground, entrapping students further in poverty and isolation, which I think is completely
fair.
True.
It's a fair comment.
But 1 in 25, you know, you think there's 50 people on my floor, 2 people, really.
Do you know the 2 that are doing the sex work?
Yeah. There's 1 2 doors down and then 1 at the opposite end. No, of course, and obviously I know that 1 in 25 is not 1 in every 25 people that you meet, but there will be a massive amount, and it is sad, the thought that someone would be forced into having to do that in order to just make ends meet.
Now, I wonder where you stand on the Never Kissed a Tory debate. Because I know they were selling those T-shirts, weren't they?
Yes. They were wearing them at Freshers Fair. The Labour Society were wearing.
Yeah. It's all a bit childish, I would have said. Rebecca Long-Bailey, who's one of the people who's standing for the leadership of the Labour Party,
yes,
has said she's never kissed a Tory and she has no Tory friends. Jess Phillips, meanwhile, who's no longer standing for the leadership, said, yeah, she's happily kissed a Tory. She said, I didn't vote her ID.
That's very Jess Phillips.
Yeah, all the people I've kissed in my life. And she's basically, by implication, saying that it's very childish, that never kissed a Tory.
It's funny, though. Do you know what I mean?
As a joke, it's fine, but people take it, and especially on... Well, I'll give you two instances where people take it too far. And there were students at Cardiff University, which I read about, and there were two Tories sharing a room. They made a thing about spitting on their window every time they went past.
Oh, you see, that's wrong.
It's totally wrong, and the university said it's wrong. And then there's Rishi Sunak, who's the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, who is from York. So he had a picture of himself with a whole load of Yorkshire tea. So
I've seen this,
Yorkshire tea. And, of course, he got a real pile-on, what's described here as a left-wing pile-on, on Twitter. People saying that they were going to boycott Yorkshire tea.
It's not really Yorkshire tea's fault either.
Well, no, precisely, saying because people were shocked that, you know, Yorkshire tea would allow itself to be associated with the Tory Chancellor of the Exchequer. There were vows to boycott it. Somebody on Twitter said, your brand is F**ED now. What would the Irish would say? Fecht. Your brand is fecht now.
There's actually a really funny tweet that I saw about this same thing. Yorkshire Tea, the brand Twitter page, said, it's been a rough weekend. On Friday, the Chancellor shared a photo of our tea. Politicians do that sometimes. Jeremy Corbyn did it in 2017. We weren't asked or involved, and we said so the same day. Lots of people got angry with us all the same, which is very Yorkshire Tea's persona. They've got it right there on the thingy. And then a woman named Sue started, she's made the tweets unavailable now, but she just was so furious, like shouting and saying how stupid it was. It was five tweets in between. And then Yorkshire Tea says, hi Sue, at the weekend you criticised for something we didn't do, and now you're criticising us for something we didn't say. From one human being to another, would it be okay for you to stop now? And then she sends like four more tweets, which are just her like being so angry with Yorkshire Tea. And then they just put, Sue, you're shouting at tea, please do look after yourself. And so, Sue, you're shouting at tea, should now, I want that on a t-shirt. Not Never Kissed a Tory. Just, Sue, you're shouting at tea.
Yes, so even though you support, basically, Labour, you're not... you don't agree with all this political factionism. You're not going to...
I think it's funny.
If there was a Tory guy that you really liked, the fact that he was a Tory, would that stop you going out with him?
In a way, it would. It wouldn't stop me going for a drink or whatever, or kissing a Tory. Like, I think that's very different. But, like, being in a serious relationship, maybe, because... I think it's ridiculous to say that politics aren't going to be important in a relationship, because it's the whole way you see the world and how you think of people and stuff. Like, those are massive things. Like, I don't think I could have... Like, do you think you could be in a serious relationship with massively different political values to you?
If you're a Tory and you're sincere about, you think it is the best way to be, and there are, even if you... If
you know I could never go out with someone who said that they were socially liberal but economically right. That pees me off.
Why?
Because then all you're saying is that, yeah, you're socially, like, think everything's okay and stuff. You just don't want anyone taking any of your money.
Well,
which really annoys me.
No, but when it comes down to it, when you get to elections and things, you vote for the party under which you think you're going to be better off.
Yeah, I agree.
People do.
Well, but I would like to think that people would vote for the party in which the majority of people would be better off, not in the one that they will be better off.
Very difficult to choose. Very difficult.
Yeah, I understand it is, and I think that's quite a young person's way of... It's a very idealistic way of looking at things.
Yes.
And I'm sure once I start getting taxed and stuff, like, I'm sure that you become more and more for yourself as you get older, because you're more realistic about the way the world works.
Now, I can't remember this. Did you play with Lego as...
Yeah, I played with Lego.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a lot. I didn't have, like, the sets, but I had... We had a random assortment of bricks, a big red box of Lego. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we still have it, to be honest.
I've not seen it for a long time.
Oh, I hope we've still got
it. So do I. I just love Lego.
I used to love making a little house. I used to make that wind. Do you remember I made a windmill once? It was quite difficult.
Yeah. Well,
a man with a tie. We had a couple of pieces where they had eyes on and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in that case, you're probably slightly privileged. It's a book that Michael Bond has written. Michael Bond is a well-known children's author.
Never heard of him.
Paddington or something. And he says in his book, Wayfinding, he says, if you're bad at directions, there's a new excuse. You were not given Lego to play with as a child. Sexism towards girls, young girls, obviously, such as steering them away from techie toys, such as trucks, Lego bricks, video games, etc., map reading, all that, has a long-term impact on their navigational abilities, according to his book. He says women are often considered worse navigators than men. This is often put down to biology. I'm saying that it's very unlikely, and that the real reason may be to do with culture and education. Now, I'm the worst person you could possibly... Who has the worst sense of direction in our house? Absolutely. But
Mum's got a really good sense of direction.
Unbelievable.
Although she did have all brothers, so I bet she did play more with those types of toys. Although she was the oldest as well, though, so she probably had her own. I don't know.
Yeah. So this looks like nonsense. He said just to sell his book, which is called... We ought to say it. It's called Wayfinding. Yeah, so you played with Lego, and you...
I played with Lego, but I did a lot of pretend playing, you know, like not really with anything. I did a lot of speaking to myself in various different weird outfits, I feel.
I think all kids do that.
Yeah. So I don't know how much, like, I really played with... You know, I was just trying to think, like, what did I have really, like, gendered toys as a kid? I think I did in a way.
Well, you had a little kitchen. You had the princess dolls and all that sort of stuff. Barbies. Well, we had loads of
Barbies because I've got older sisters there.
Yeah. But we also got new Barbies and that stuff, didn't we? I'm pretty sure we did.
Barbies we did a bit, but not loads and loads new Barbies because they stopped making them as good. They used to make these ones called Generation Girl dolls, which no one my age would really know about them because they're Anna's age, probably. But yeah, Generation Girls, and they used to have different names, and they each had like a different career, and one of them was an artist and one of them was like a painter, and they were really, really good. And then they started making like Barbie, like, they were just not as... They didn't have character the way that the Generation Girls did.
No, was that trying to make them more or less sexist?
I suppose they weren't. They just felt really... There was a girl called, like, Chelsea. There was one that was Barbie, like, Barbie equivalent, who was, like, an actor or something. But they didn't feel... I think they started making them really obviously, like... Barbie can be a doctor now, like, you can be a doctor too, like, really too obvious, whereas the older ones kind of felt a lot more real, which is probably subconsciously, like, what you liked as a child.
Just talk a wee bit about consent. Mm. Now, the reason I'm talking about consent is I was putting together our award-winning entry for the podcast awards. So I was listening to some of the old podcasts, and we talked about consent to sex and what a sort of grey area is and how difficult it is. And I was asking if the university sort of helped you out in that area. And you were telling me about this highly amusing video they showed you about don't force a cup of tea on someone if they don't want a cup of tea. And just because they had a cup of tea last week doesn't mean that they're up for another cup of tea.
If they're asleep and they've previously asked for a cup of tea but now they're asleep, you don't just pour the tea all over them. Yeah.
Well, it's clearly still a problem, assault. Or assault because of misunderstandings, if you like, or because of the whole issue of consent. A university, this is East Anglia University, told a student who was accused of sexual assault to write an essay on consent.
Oh my gosh.
After deciding there was insufficient evidence to take any formal action against him. The alleged victim had criticised the University of East Anglia for taking 5 months to start its investigation, and she said the delay had left her in limbo, suffering trauma, etc., and on the verge of dropping out. They did give her £1,000 in compensation, but the police had decided not to pursue this, and presumably that was because they didn't think they'd get a conviction, which is what happens in a lot of these cases. They don't pursue them if they don't think it's an open and shut case. Details of the incident have emerged as universities are increasingly accused of having poor policies in place for investigating sexual abuse and harassment. The female student had informed the university in an email that the police had concluded their inquiries, which should have triggered the start of an investigation by the university. Mm. The university later said it didn't receive that information. So it's a sort of, you know, we didn't...
He says, she says.
Yeah, we didn't get the email type thing. When it finally did investigate...
Yeah, you can't pass this up with a, oh, sorry, I missed this email, you know?
Yeah, well, when it finally did investigate, it told her there was insufficient evidence to establish it, which I suppose at that stage there would be. And she told the student newspaper that she felt completely let down by the university. And, you know, like I say, the only punishment was he had to write an essay on consent. I was wondering if, you know, these stories...
That's ridiculous, having to write an essay on it. That would make you feel about, like, this small.
Yeah.
And when I said this, I made a small little gesture.
I think people would have guessed that. I'm just wondering...
I don't know what the policies are, to be honest. I think they should, when they're talking about consent, they should say, and these are our policies. Like, we operate a zero tolerance policy,
well, I mean,
and
sure,
this is what happens.
I'm sure,
like,
the University of York does operate a zero tolerance policy.
Yeah, but it's just
have
like,
you still
how zero tolerance is it, really? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but apart from the thing about a cup of tea and not pouring out somebody who's asleep, have you heard any more about this sort of issue?
Because
stories do appear in the papers from time to time.
No, there's no further discussion of consent.
Mm. Without going into detail, is it something that you feel you've had to deal with in terms of, you know, your social... I know you don't tell me about everything that goes on, but...
I think there needs to be a healthy boundary of what I do and don't tell you, you know?
No, well, I'm just wondering if there's... You know, because people of my generation, if you like, you know, the Gallen community, we tend to think that, oh, it won't be long before, you know, it's a written consent. You have to, like, there's 20 listed things, you know, hand on the knee, yes, tick, I'll consent to that, et cetera, et cetera. That it's almost got to that level.
No, it hasn't at all, though. No. Like, that's not what people do.
Where your boundaries are, is that what you're
saying?
Yeah,
but then also, like, often these things take place where one or the other, one member of the party is drunk, or it's late, or it's someone you know and you would feel uncomfortable with. Like, I can definitely imagine myself being in a situation where you would feel uncomfortable to say, oh, I don't feel comfortable with this, because that's a massively nerve-wracking thing to say. Or even...
And of course,
if you're drunk,
you wouldn't be able. You probably even wouldn't be able to articulate that because you'd
not
be
as
too...
well. Or if you were nervous or shy, like, and even if they were going to be absolutely okay with it, and they would say, "Oh yeah, of course," like, I'm not going to do anything that you're not comfortable with.
And I think
it's still nerve-wracking to say that.
I mean, this is most boys, because you read the odd extreme case in the paper, and reading this, it sounds like a sort of, you know, I didn't go into the details, but basically it says here, the incident happened in the autumn of 2018 when the undergraduate returned to her boyfriend's house after a night out. She fell asleep and awoke to find the male student touching her, she said. Now, it doesn't say, you know, to what extent the touching went, etc., etc. So this may be a case of sort of misunderstandings, and obviously the police investigated and didn't take any further, which doesn't mean anything. I mean, it could still, because often they just don't take things any further because they think, well, it's not going to stand up in court,
regardless of who is guilty or not.
It must put people off taking the whole thing to the police, really.
Yeah, I think it definitely would, because then you think, well, what's the point of putting myself through all of this, having to tell a bunch of random strangers these really massively personal things, especially if it's a boyfriend. And I think that's often what can be, like, the misconception with, like, assault cases or a case of, like, consent and stuff, is that you imagine it's someone that you didn't know. It's a very clear thing where they're like...
It's
someone you've never met who is awful to you or whatever, but often it can be someone you've had a previous relationship with and it's all been fine, and then you don't consent, which is obviously still, you know, there can still be marital rape in relationships. Like, I'm not at all saying that there can't be, but it's just, I would feel you're much less likely to report it because you think, well...
Yeah.
what's the point of me making this massive fuss of someone that I've previously really cared about in order to, and probably still do care about.
I think there's also, I'll tell you what else is also an issue these days, and that is that the police, if they are investigating, so try and build up, I mean, in all fairness to them, to try and build up a case, they will take your mobile phone and look at what's on your mobile phone. Mm. And then they've got to disclose it to the defence lawyer, who might find that you've put all sorts of jokey, sexy texts on way back, and then they're trying, and it becomes a character thing in court, and they say, exactly, well, like, she was well up for it. She didn't really.
Yeah. There was the case of, I think I mentioned it on the podcast as it was happening, there was the case of a girl. Believe it was in Northern Ireland, but I can't remember entirely.
You didn't mention it as it was actually happening.
No. Just after it happened, as the case was ongoing.
Yeah.
Who had her underwear held up in court, and they were there was huge protests in Ireland at the time. I think it was Ireland. Basically saying, like, you can't use someone's underwear against them. But regardless of whether people protest it or not, that's humiliating and upsetting. And I wouldn't want, if something really awful happened to me, I wouldn't want my character called into question, because I'm sure that it would be, and I'm sure that they would dig up things that.
Yeah. Well, yes, and then
you think, oh, and if they don't end up being prosecuted in the end, then what's the point?
Precisely. And you would think in the Weinstein case, for instance, you can understand now why people do sign non-disclosure agreements. You know, there were loads of those non-disclosure agreements, and these are people who've stuck to them, you know, not appeared in court to testify against him. Now, everybody says that the women who've testified against him have been very brave, which of course they have. Mm. But you can understand if you feel wronged by something that Weinstein's done, and then you're offered, then you have the choice, don't you? You can either report it, take it to court, go through all that you said, and have your character destroyed in court, which it often would be, or you can.
Especially by people like Weinstein's lawyers, who I imagine are.
Yes.
Brilliant at their job.
I suspect he has. Yeah, we've all seen movies, I suspect. Yeah. He's got very good American lawyers. But you can understand why they think, well, look, I've had this done to me, which has caused this hurt. I can get, from Weinstein's company, I can get $50,000 or $100,000, which, you know, may assuage the hurt, the fact that you're getting the money, or I can go to court. And you can understand why in the hundreds and hundreds of cases, and when it got to court, there was only 5 cases against him,
and only two out of those were,
you know, was he found guilty on. So you can understand.
Oh, I can come in. And I wouldn't call anyone cowardly for not coming forward with a case. Like, I think especially at, like, a university, often people run in the same circles, and you don't want to be the girl that's accused everyone's friend of assault. Do you want to have some music, Dad? Lighten the mood?
Well, this will lighten the mood, because this is a fantastic song.
Holding hands at midnight, 'neath a starry sky. It's nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one girl, sighing sigh after sigh. It's nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try.
Sarah Vaughan.
Lovely.
Are you familiar with the song?
I have heard the song before. Wouldn't have been able to tell you what her name was, but
Loads of people recorded it. I mean, Frank Sinatra's done it, loads of people. It's one of those songs that's known as a jazz standard, composed by George Gershwin. You've heard of George Gershwin, with lyrics by his brother Ira Gershwin. And they wrote so many fantastic songs. That was originally written for a movie, A Damsel in Distress, which was performed by Fred Astaire. And it was published in 1937, back to the 30s. Sarah Vaughan lived from 1924 to 1990, so she was 66 when she died. An American jazz singer, nicknamed Sassy and the Divine One, won 4 Grammy Awards, including a Lifetime Achievement Award. And a critic, Scott Young, wrote that she had, quotes, one of the most wondrous voices of the 20th century. And that was from her 1950 album, which was reissued on a 1955 album called Sarah Vaughan in Hi-Fi. In 1955, we were all crazy about hi-fi. Listen to this, we'd say. And it was High Fidelity, which we'd never heard before, which was amazing. And that those were the sort of albums that were selling in the mid-50s. And do you know who loves that song?
No.
Bob Dylan.
Ah. Oh.
It's on... Bob Dylan did this. I've lent you the CDs, but Bob Dylan did this radio show.
And yes, you did hear that right. CDs.
Theme Time, which you're going to try and you're going to find someone in university.
There is a room, because I've got CDs for audio... like audio activities for languages. You've got to go to like a special room and stuff, and I've actually not been yet. I've had two activities, of both of which I've just not done, because you have to go to like this special room and I can never find it. So that's going to be my objective, is to find this room.
Well, the stuff on the Theme Time Radio Hour, it's a 1 hour radio show hosted by Bob Dylan. It went out from May 2006 to April 2009, an eclectic freeform mix of blues, folk, rockabilly, R&B, soul, bebop, rock and roll, country and pop music. So those albums of the things that he played in his Theme Time Radio Hour, absolutely all sorts of music. And he's explained it, because he was brought up in Hibbing, Minnesota, which is right up on the Great Lakes, way up where radio signals from across the US could reach there very easily. So he heard African music stations, reggae, and it's all on those albums, sort of sweet music stations that would have played something like that Sarah Vaughan thing. And they're all there, a lot of rock and roll, a lot of rhythm and blues, and they're all the records that influenced Bob Dylan. Loads of them, fantastic.
Brilliant. And for my song this week, it's a song called Malamente by Rosalía. Antes de caer ese suelo, ya sabía que se rompía. Está parpadeando la luz del descansillo. Una voz de la escalera, alguien cruzando el pasillo.
So going a bit Latin this week.
Well, yeah. Well, actually Spanish, because it is a Spanish song.
What's malamente mean?
So malamente is it means badly, pretty much, but it's not a real Spanish word. It's like completely ungrammatical, and she chose it because a lot of the song is about kids from the wrong side of the tracks, and then also like old Spanish traditions and stuff like that. But it's from her album El Mal Quiere, which is a lot of pressure on the old accent here. And the whole album is like a conceptual album about like toxic relationships and stuff, but she takes a lot of like flamenco music that would have kind of been, I guess, a bit cringy or just like not modern, and a lot of like old traditional like Spanish sounding things, and then really brings them into the modern era. She's won like 5 Latin Grammy Awards and a Grammy Award, and worked with Pharrell Williams, and she's very, very cool. And I would recommend you watching the video of this song, Malamente, because she uses like motorbikes. She's like bullfighting, but it's motorbikes instead of bulls, and like lots of other things like that, like flamenco inspired kind of hip hoppy dancing. It's very cool. Lots of good songs on the album as well.
A few emails this week, Ruth. David Ailes says he loved your Squeezy Yogurt podcast. That's because I'm always looking for a title for when I put it on Acast. I always look for a title, and it's usually a quote from you. And last week's title was "I'm trying to save the planet, but I did buy some Squeezy Yogurt pouches for little kids." So he said, "I love the Squeezy Yogurt podcast. I'm on holiday in Spain now for 2 months, so we'll be able to listen to Malamente. 3:30 a.m. at the moment. Love the natural conversation between you two." So bless you for that, David. Chris Bryant, big fan. He has headlined his email Tofu versus Meat. "Hi both. I listen to about 15 different podcasts every week, and I look forward to yours each week the most."
Wow.
Top out of 15. He says, "I'd like to comment on the piece you did last week about the environmental impact of plant foods relative to meat. Ruth might not need to give up her pescatarianism quite so fast. You did, of course, mention that the study is unpublished." So this was the study we talked about last week, where farmers said that tofu is worse for the planet than meat. And the National Farmers Union is, of course, eager to interpret this in a way which favours their industry.
Okay.
The analysis still found that beef was worse for the environment than tofu. And the author is quoted as saying, without a doubt, peas and ground nuts always have a lower environmental impact than any livestock products.
Mm.
The article also discussed other studies, including a 2018 study from the University of Oxford, which found that giving up animal products could cut your carbon footprint by up to 73%. He says, I'm very impressed by the sense of responsibility that Ruth shows on this topic. Of course, she can just decide to eat meat like everyone else if she wants to, but she decides to do the right thing. Good for you, Ruth.
Does he say that?
He says, good for you,
wow,
Ruth.
Wow, usually I get roasted in these emails.
I know, like vegetables. You may have missed the boat on Veganuary, but perhaps you could use this show as a platform to invent Moo-Free March and encourage your listeners to give up dairy for March instead. The environmental impact of switching to oat milk is huge. And he says, thank you both for the laughs and keep up the great work.
Oh, that's lovely email.
Some laughs as well, isn't that nice?
Hmm.
And Mark Lewis, I'm now getting people writing to me with advice, wanting advice on parenting.
My God, do not take it.
Mark Lewis says, one request, as a father of a five-year-old daughter and with my wife...
It is a miracle that I've turned out like this. Not in some kind of crack den.
He says, I wonder if you had any top tips for successfully bringing up well-rounded young ladies to navigate life's potentially choppy waters. From the podcast, Ruth is a credit to you. Don't believe everything you hear.
Yeah, it's only an hour.
From the podcast, Ruth is a credit to you and Mrs. Kellner, and you have a great relationship with her. And Martha, this is another daughter, is clearly carving out a cracking career in sports journalism, which was a typically male-dominated environment in the past. She's a groundbreaker, that girl. So, isn't that nice? And I've sent him a bit of advice.
Have you? Hmm. What did you say?
I said the important thing is listen to them and talk to them and discuss things in a calm and reasoned manner. Not like I would. Although it's talking about your mum, largely.
Shout
at them like I do. You know, judicious use of swear words. They know you're being serious.
I think it is interesting in that, like, this podcast has kind of created, obviously, amongst very few people, because, you know, it's not the most highly listened to thing in the world.
No, it's not compared to the Kardashians, but in our own little way, we sort of do all right for listeners. I think the important thing is that everybody else who's got girls, largely, and I have to say, the audience is... it seems to be mostly male, or at least the people who write to us are quite male, and they're usually dads. And I think it's always interesting, whatever your own relationship is, whatever your own, you know, whether you've got daughters, sons, whatever, the relationship between parents and child is interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's also like...
Also in the podcast world, if you're in the podcast world, there are so many podcasts that are rather like the one that I do when I'm not doing the one with you, which are two guys laughing at each other's jokes.
There's all those jokes that says if you're a 30-something man and you've not started a podcast with your friend, like, what are you doing and whatever. But I do think, like, parent-child relationships are interesting because they're obviously not for everyone. Like, some people have terrible parents who should never have been parents and stuff. But for the most part, I hope that your parents love you unconditionally, which makes it an interesting relationship because there's no backsies on it. You know, when you have friends, if a friend is awful or... you know, you drift apart or whatever, you get out of it. It's the same with sibling relationships. You can get out of those friendships, but when you are tied to each other in the way that you are with family, there's stuff holding you together
regardless of whether it's
a good relationship for a year or not. Like, you're kind of just in it.
Parents love their children unconditionally, but we don't love them all the same. So I, as you know, I have a sort of league ranking. So if
you it moves around constantly,
moves
you know,
constantly.
You're trying to get into that Premier League spot. You don't want to be in the relegation zone.
You've only got to turn up half an hour late one week. And, you know, you slip down a place.
Yeah, my train was late today and I was texting. I was saying, sorry, I'm so sorry. Please don't let me drop.
Did you have something else on your mind?
Yes, I do have something on my mind, Dad. I read a really interesting article that said, a ban on intimate relationships between staff and their students at University College London is a wake-up call for universities, campaigners have said. And so they've put in a policy which is banning intimate relationships between superiors who are like directly in charge of students, undergrads or whatever.
I thought that was banned anyway.
Exactly. This is the third university overall and the first Russell Group university to put this policy into place.
Yeah.
Can you actually believe that is not just inherently in university policy?
Yeah, I thought it would be. I mean, when I think about the number of films I've seen where...
There's an inappropriate relationship.
Yes, Michael Caine educating Rita.
The Graduate, what's that film about?
Oh, no, The Graduate, he's having a relationship with the mother of his girlfriend.
Whoa, I've never read that. It's a play, isn't it?
Yes, it started off as a novel. Written by a guy called Charles Webb.
Wow, that's some good knowledge. It's almost as if you Wikipedia'd that, Dad.
Almost as if.
There's loads of these films that show these inappropriate relationships. And I just assumed that was like always what there was. But it just... And I kind of thought that this was sort of a relic of a bygone era, you know, of having relationships with staff students. But there was a story, I mean, about a girl called Emma that's not her real name, but they say, about her supervisor, like, invited her out instead of meeting her on campus, like, kept meeting her, like, asked to meet her in a pub. And then when she arrived, she assumed it was going to be in a professional capacity. And all of a sudden he was acting like it was a date and she didn't know what to do because she didn't want to make it uncomfortable for her in the next things. And there's a few stories like that that has been the reason why they've put this policy in place or whatever. And then, like, loads of the specifications of the policy are things like, where possible, meetings should be taking place on campus. You shouldn't be emailing from your personal email. You should be using your work phone. I thought, that's gone. Not gone. I know that some people will still take advantage or whatever. But I thought that generally, people had kind of stopped sleeping. Lecturers had kind of stopped sleeping with undergrads. Like,
you would have thought so, but it's still going on. The film I was thinking of after...
The Woody Allen one.
Well, the Woody Allen one is called Irrational Man. It's a terrible film. And it's Joaquin Phoenix, he's 40s, 50s,
And
he's sleeping with his student, who is Emma Stone.
Early
Emma Stone
film. I've not seen it, but I've seen pictures trailers and
that. Yeah. Well, I watched the whole film.
He likes Emma Stone a lot, does Woody Allen.
The Saturday job is an interesting... this is probably more appropriate when you were a teenager, but the Saturday job appears to be dying out. Well, that
oh,
makes
really?
Sense, doesn't it? Well, yeah, I mean, people used to do all sorts of things on a Saturday. All your siblings had Saturday jobs, but that's because Saturday jobs were available. Martha, who was obviously...
They are much less available now.
Much less available. And the trend, according to the Resolution Foundation, which is one of these think tank things, the trend for the disappearance of Saturday jobs could harm young people's prospects and is contributing to a rise in the number of those of working age who have never been employed. It should prompt a pause for thought, the think tank warns, given evidence that working at the same time as studying actually improves long-term educational and employment results. This is actually your Saturday job, even though we record it on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
The fact you do need to be doing something outside university that is work, do you think so?
Yeah, I think so. Just, and even like
amongst your chums, do some of them work in bars and things?
Not while they're at university. Most of them have had a job at one time or another, have a job for the holidays and things, but while they're actually at university, not so much. But like, most of them have worked. But I always think, like, so I've worked at Sports Direct and then this for ages, and I know this is a very untraditional type of job and I'm very lucky to have it, but at least it does give me something where I am, to an extent, working in a professional capacity. Like, I don't know how you would go straight from university into a full-time job and not having done anything that's not education.
And it's a shock to the system, I think. You know, even when you say you're going into a bit of work experience, the fact that you've got to be there all day, in the one place, if you like. I mean, this is what, when you were working at Sports Direct, which was only like a sort of Christmas job, wasn't it, over the Christmas holidays?
A bit longer, but essentially.
When you were doing that, you were always, I used to walk down with you, and if I came to meet you when you were coming out of work, you were always phenomenally tired.
I mean, in fairness, tired, though, been in the same I think place. That was partially Sports Direct Wakefield's fault. Like, it was a soul-crushing place to be in. Like, it was not nice.
No.
But that's Sports Direct, I think.
That probably is Sports Direct.
But yeah, even so,
and
like,
if what's-his-name Mike Ashley is listening, he's welcome to dispute it.
Yeah. Or even stuff like, I've got, like, this writing job that I'm doing at the moment, which is forcing me to send a lot of, like, professional emails and stuff, which I remember having to send my first ones when I was like 16 and just literally being like having to send a picture of them and ask mum, like, can I send this? Like, does this sound okay? And now I can do emails quite quickly and professionally and responding to stuff on time, meeting deadlines. Like, it's those types of things outside of university that
Yes, because you didn't know how, you had to send an invoice.
I had to look up how to do it and stuff.
You just look up on the internet?
I just Googled it. But, like, it is those types of things that make you just more mature.
It's interesting that these days, if you don't know how to do something,
you can just Google it,
I must have told you about that cartoon I saw, which is one of the most brilliant cartoons I've ever seen. There's a woman who's doing a fried egg on the stove. The egg's caught fire and the pan's caught fire, and she's standing there over the stove, and there's like a conflagration coming out of the frying pan, flames all over the place, and she turns around to her husband and says, quick, Google it. Well, Ruth, you've amused us once or twice already with tales of your Catholic education and everything. Anything specifically to amuse us this week?
Specifically, I liked this Your Crush. That was quite funny. It says, VK, think your initials are your best quality. Can we be more? And I thought maybe you wouldn't understand this. VK is the name of a drink. It's like an Alka-Pop drink, you know, like WKD. Yeah, yeah. But it's what everyone drinks, and I never really had heard of it that much before, because everyone drank a lot of, like, WKDs, a bit of VKs. But yeah, VK, I think your initials. So I liked that, Your Crush. And then
we ought to explain that Your Crush is Avia.
Where
crushes.
You can, yeah, you can post your anonymous
Lonely Hearts
crush, confession of love or whatever. And then I never know what's appropriate from your fest, because some of them are quite rude.
It doesn't matter if they're rude.
You sure?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this was what I thought was the funniest Your Fest, but I didn't know whether it was a little bit inappropriate.
Well, let's judge.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah. So it says, life doesn't get worse than having a Derwent guy, Derwent is the name of one of the colleges, pie off a shag to go to catered breakfast. But that was quite funny.
People will, anyone who knows the expression pie off, which is, it's a young person's expression, isn't
it? Is it? Do you not have that as much?
Not as much, but very amusing.
I didn't really have a meme for you this week, I'm afraid. There was just nothing that I found, nothing spoke to me, loads and loads.
Do you know what we forgot to do? We forgot to give the address for the emails. And of course, as I always say...
So if you're still with us...
Yes, as I always say, the more you do, the less we have to do. But it is interesting if people either open up a discussion or continue a discussion that we've already started.
So if you would like to, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. And while you're on your computer or your phone or whatever, you can go over to Spotify and listen to the songs in full from this week on our playlist. If you search Ruthie Uni Dad and Me or Martin and Ruth or Ruthie Podcast, any of those things, you'll find the playlist. And it'll have the songs in full from this week and all the other weeks.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed for listening.